Rumpole and the Bubble Reputation by John Mortimer. Adapted by Richard Stoneman. Starring Benedict Cumberbatch as Horace Rumpole.
Unlike my wife Hilda, you may be fortunate enough never to have read an historical novel by the overrated authoress Miss Amelia Nettleship. Her books contain virginal heroines and courageous heroes, and thus present an extremely misleading account of our rough island story.
Ooh.
Huh? In 1965, Miss Nettleship was frequently photographed wearing cotton print dresses with large spectacles on her pretty little nose, feeding her cats in a wisteria-clad Tudor cottage on the outskirts of Godalming.
I don't believe it.
Oh, for God's sake.
In the interviews she gave, Miss Nettleship referred to the evils of the permissive society and the dreadful consequences of sex before marriage.
No. Oh, no.
Alas, for a while, she shared my bed. Not in person, but in book form, propped up on the bosom of she who must be obeyed.
Do you have a cold coming on, Hilda?
No, Rumpole. Touching.
Oh. Sorry.
Not you. This book is touching. Very touching. I thought Lord Stingo was a bit of a rake, but he's turned out quite differently.
What a sad disappointment.
Nonsense. It's ending very happily. He swore he'd never marry, but Lady Sophia has made him swallow his words.
If they were written by Amelia Nettleship, I'm sure he found them indigestible. Any chance of turning out the light? I need some sleep. Sleep at its own world, and a wild realm of wild reality. And dreams in their development have breath and tears.
And so, after a mere 5 or 6 hours of shut-eye, I struggled through the following day until my blood alcohol concentration slipped to a dangerously low level.
Teach us, sprite or bird, what sweet thoughts are thine. I have never heard praise of love or wine that panted forth a flood of rapture so divine.
As I left chambers that evening, I faced the age-old dilemma.
Chorus hymeneal or triumphant chant matched with thine would be all but an empty vaunt, a thing wherein we feel there is some hidden want.
Should I hurry home to she who must be obeyed and to our young son Nicholas?
What objects are the fountains of thy happy strain? What fields or waves or mountains? What shapes of sky or plain? What love of thine own kind? What ignorance of pain?
Or take a moment to review the strengths and weaknesses of the case against my client and thereby strive to become a more effective advocate. I hurried to Pomeroy's wine bar, where I spied my learned colleague, Claude Erskine Brown, alone and palely loitering.
Erskine Brown, what can ail you?
Oh, Rumpole, it's my practice.
Still practising? I thought you might have got the hang of it by now.
Oh, yes, yes, amusing. I used to do a decent class of work, but it's come to this. Yeah. Actual bodily harm and affray at the Kitten Argogo, Soho.
Ah, yes, I know it well.
Yes, two unsavoury characters in leather jackets, dueling with broken bottles of Coca-Cola.
Sounds like my line of country.
Exactly. I'm scraping the bottom of your barrel.
Thank you.
I'll have to ask for some tips. For instance, what on earth am I supposed to do?
To begin with, visit the locus in quo. Go to the scene of the crime. Inspect the geography of the place.
The geography of the Kitten Argogo? Do I really have to?
Of course. Then during the trial you can suggest it was too dark to identify anyone, or the witness couldn't see around a pillar, or...
It's you, isn't it? I wasn't sure, but now I'm looking at you close up, I'm pretty sure I'm right. It is Horace Rumpole.
I think so, yes. Mr...
Machin. Maurice Machin. Editor of the Daily Beacon. We met a long time ago when you were defending a wife-beater in Bromley. You got him off.
So he wasn't a wife-beater.
Oh, we both knew he was guilty as charged. But you were very clever, Mr. Rumpole. And I have to confess, I was mightily impressed.
Thank you, Mr. Machin.
You can call me Murray.
Gosh, can I really?
And you can help me out, professionally speaking, with a little spot of bother I'm in. My reputation's been impugned, and I seem to be charged with libel.
Rumpole never does libel.
Rumpole never turns down any kind of case, especially if a reputation's at stake.
So, you think a reputation's important?
Good name in a man or woman, dear my lord, is the immediate jewel of their souls. Who steals my purse, steals trash. Tis something, nothing. Twas mine, tis his, and has been slave to thousands. But he that filches from me my good name robs me of that which not enriches him, and makes me poor indeed.
Is that one of your speeches, Mr. Rumpole?
Shakespeare, actually.
Of course.
Your good name, Mr. Machin, is something I shall be prepared to defend to the death. And, of course, the good name of your newspaper.
Our paper does go in for a certain amount of fearless exposure.
Yes. The exposure on page 3 every day. The Beacon Beauties. They're very popular in the clerk's room.
I'm not talking about that kind of exposure. I'm talking about telling the truth about people in the public eye. We're not a cheap, sordid little scandal sheet, Mr. Rumpole.
Perish the thought.
So, would you be happy to act on my behalf?
A barrister is an old taxi plying for hire. That's the fine tradition of our trade. It's my sacred duty, Mr. Machin, to take on anyone who's in trouble, however repentant I may happen to find them.
Thank you.
Think nothing of it. Now, what exactly is the little spot of bother you say you're in? Give me details.
Well, as a newspaper, we're dedicated to exposing hypocrisy in our society, wherever it exists, high or low. So, when we find this female pretending to be a force for purity and parading her morality before the great British public, denouncing premarital sex, even if it's just the normal stuff, well, we feel it's our duty to tell our readers that this self-same female does not practice what she preaches. And so, I commissioned this little piece that ran a couple of months ago.
May I see?
It's not your case, Erskine Brown.
Oh, if there's no, it should be, Rumpole. The Private Life of Amelia Nettleship.
Really? Not the Amelia Nettleship? The expert bottler of pure historical bilge water?
The novelist and hypocrite.
She robs me of my sleep. I know nothing of her morality, but her prose style depraves and corrupts the English language. Who wrote the article?
Miss Stella January.
Oh, she left the paper last week.
And went where?
Not sure. Manchester, I think. To work on The Guardian.
We have to find her.
Really?
If we're going to fight this, which we are, I shall need to speak to Miss January. And then I shall conquer. I never plead guilty.
There speaks a man who knows damn all about libel. You haven't even read the offending article yet.
Oh, just give me a précis.
Amelia Nettleship, two-faced charlatan, girls in her novels always keep their legs crossed until they've got a ring on their finger. Her own private life rather different, torrid past. Makes Mae West sound like Florence Nightingale. Home near Godalming, scene of numerous sordid liaisons. Married men living in the wee small hours. Oh, it goes on and on.
Much like Amelia Nettleship.
I have a meeting later with the barrister who's representing the proprietor of the Beacon. The Sheridan Club. 8 o'clock. Can you join us, Mr. Rumpole?
Of course. Who's the barrister?
Robin Pepiat, QC.
Porky Pepiat? We were at Winchester together.
I believe he's rather good. And rather expensive.
Quite a contrast to Rumpole. On both counts.
Why don't I take that newspaper cutting, Erskine Brown?
Yeah.
And why don't we pop down the kit in a go-go so you can prepare for your nasty little affray?
Must we?
Oh, I think we must. Say what you like about Erskine Brown, and I frequently do. He does take advice. And so we found ourselves in a dark cul-de-sac just off Wardour Street, where every doorway had a young woman with a beckoning finger and an obscenely short skirt to entice the passing trade into the basement cabins beneath their high-heeled shoes.
Here we are.
Oh, Oh, no, Rumpole, I really don't think I can. What would Phyllida say if she could see me now? Oh,
I'm sure she'd applaud your professional commitment.
She wouldn't think I was some kind of dirty old man.
I doubt she'd think of you as old, Erskine Brown. Dirty, yes. Now, careful going down the stairs.
Did you?
It was, in fact, difficult to imagine what Miss Phyllida Trant would have thought of the two of us as we took our places at a small table in front of the tiny stage. I hadn't seen the Portia of our chambers for nearly 3 months. She was weeks away from giving birth and only days away from getting married. Her fiancé looked flustered.
My God, Rumpel, that woman's virtually naked. And she's coming this way. No, don't look, don't look.
Evening, gents. Can I get you some drinks and some company?
No, thank you. We're here for purely observational duties.
You are?
We intend to look and learn, nothing more.
Well, no one's allowed to do any touching, if that was you was hoping for. I'll fetch some champagne,
no,
shall
no,
I?
No, that won't be... Oh, damn. She'll bring a bottle of fizzy cider and charge us 3 guineas. I'll try and stop her.
No, don't leave me, Rumpel. Good Lord. What on earth is she wearing? Or rather, not wearing.
This way, Gav. Smile.
What?
I think I've cleared up the matter, though you will have to drink this glass of whiskey, I'm afraid.
What about you?
Oh, I have my con in the Sheridan Club. I'm sure you'll be fine on your own.
Someone just took my picture, Rumpel.
Really? Well, perhaps they'll try to sell you a copy of the photograph before you leave.
What?
If I were you, I'd decline the offer. Oh, look. I think the artiste is coming to join you.
Oh, no! No, 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 please. Stay back. Please!
As Erskine Brown enjoyed the attentions of Miss Fifi Bojangles and the semi-conscious snake she wore around her neck, I joined the editor of the Daily Beacon and Robin Pepiat QC in the Sheridan Club, where champagne really was champagne, and the waiters kept their tops on.
Well, we should work as a team, old chap. And as leading counsel, I suppose I'm the captain.
Are we playing cricket, old chap?
If it were, it would be an extremely expensive game for the Beacon. The proprietors have contracted to indemnify the editor against any libel damages, no matter how high.
Yeah, I insisted on that when I took the job.
That was very sensible of your client, Rumpel.
Was it really?
Oh, yes. And don't worry, I realize you're not used to this type of case. You are, after all, one of the criminal boys.
Just a juvenile delinquent compared to you, old chap.
Quite. And it's obvious to me we mustn't attempt to justify these serious charges against Miss Nettleship's honour.
Why not? Wouldn't that be cricket?
If we try to prove she's some kind of amateur tot, the jury might bump the damages up to £6,000 or £7,000.
But you filed a defence alleging the article's a true bill.
But that's just our bargaining counter. Something to give away as part of the deal. When we agree terms with the other side, we'll abandon all our allegations gracefully.
We put up our hands?
Well, yes. You mustn't worry about the details. Peregrine Lancy is a Guinness, and I'm lunching with Perry tomorrow. I'll just whisper the thought of a quiet little settlement into his ear, and that'll be that.
Whisper sweet nothings? I'll not be party to any settlement.
Quite right.
No, I will defend the good name of my client, Mr. Maurice Machin, as a responsible editor.
At our expense?
If necessary, yes. He wouldn't have published that story unless there was some truth in it, would you, Mr. Machin?
Certainly not.
That's all well and good, old chap. But there's absolutely no evidence that Miss Nettleship has behaved as described in the article.
No evidence? Then we must find some, old chap. I'm quite unable to believe that anyone who writes so badly has no other vices. A few days later, I entered the clerk's room of our chambers in Equity Court to see our chief clerk, Henry, sitting at his desk, perusing a copy of the Daily Beacon. Good morning, Henry.
Oh, good morning, sir. Didn't hear you come in.
Oh, please don't stop reading. I'm sure that fine crusading paper has exposed yet more hypocrisy.
You might be right, sir.
And talking of the Beacon, I've got your brief for the Nettleship case. You'll be pleased to hear we've agreed a nice fee plus refreshers of 10 guineas. So you can make it last a while, can't you?
At 10 guineas per day, I'll stretch it out till the trump of doom.
Morning, Henry.
Yet, oh, morning, Rumpel.
How goes your sordid affray?
Still sordid. Much like this rag, which I feel should be banned from chambers.
Now, I wouldn't look in there.
There's the Beacon Beauty today. Someone with an IQ slightly smaller than a... Oh. My God.
What's wrong, Erskine Brown? Someone you know?
I did try to stop you, sir.
It's me.
You're the Beacon Beauty?
No, no. Some kind of story under a photograph of me. Spotted in the Kitten Agogo. Junior barrister. Oh. Claude Erskine Brown, gawping at the steamy strippers. I wasn't gawping. I was researching. You told me to go there. The locus in quo. This is all your fault, Rumpel.
Clark's room?
At least I spelled your name correctly.
Yeah, it's here now,
and you're not actually looking directly at Fifi Bojangles.
Away,
or her snake.
Head of Chambers would like to see you, sir.
Me? Ballard wants to see me?
Quite urgently, sir.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
But he didn't sack you, so what's the problem?
What's the problem? For one thing, Ballard wants me to sue the Daily Beacon to protect the reputation of Number 3 Equity Court, which will cost me a small fortune. Worse than that, far worse than that, what will Phyllida say when she sees the photograph?
And why would she see it? You don't have the Beacon delivered to your place in Islington, do you?
The milkman will show it to her. I think he hates me for some reason, and I'm sure he reads that despicable scandal sheet. Oh, yes. Philly will see me, gawping.
Well, she's not going to call off the wedding. Not for something as trivial as this nonsense.
She might.
Well, in which case, you won't need me as best man.
Well, don't you want to be a best man? Don't you want to support me, stand shoulder to shoulder, side by side?
Normally, I'd love to, Erskine Brown, but I do have my own reputation to protect.
What?
I'm joking, of course. I'm sure the wedding would go ahead as planned.
I hope you're right.
Good evening, Mr. Rumpel.
Big. How lovely to see you. Erskine Brown, have you ever made the acquaintance of Mr. Ferdinand Isaac Gerald Newton?
No.
The best private eye in town.
Not a lot of competition, Mr. Rumpel.
Even so. Come to the bar. Let me buy you a drink. And I'll tell you what I need you to find for me.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Mr. Erskine Brown, I've got your message.
You've got some nerve coming here, Machin.
But you asked me to come here.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. Because I'm furious. How could you print those lies about me?
What lies? You were in the Kitten Agogo. You were watching a stripper perform on stage.
Only because I got involved in a violent affray with actual bodily harm.
You had a fight in a club?
No, 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 no. I wasn't fighting. I'm defending an affray that occurred in the Kitten Agogo. I was merely looking at the scene of the crime. But your wretched paper didn't mention any of that.
That I know is true.
Just ask Rumpel. He'll confirm my story.
Yeah. But you lot all stick together, don't you?
I insist you print an apology. You have to explain to your readers that I'm not the kind of man they think I am.
If we print an apology, it makes it look like we got it wrong.
You did get it wrong!
Only according to you. But I think our story stands up. So, good night, Mr. Erskine Brown.
Come back here, Machin! I demand you tell the world! I demand you tell them! Watching naked women does not make me a pervert! Oh, God.
By the time I returned to Erskine Brown's table, the odious Mr. Machin had left the building. Fig Newton set off to Godalming to stake out Amelia Nettleship's cottage, and I pushed off home for a fitful night with the book-loving Hilda. Returning to chambers in the morning, a surprise awaited me in the gentleman's lavatory. Erskine Brown, you're shaving.
Yeah, Rumpel, you're early.
Did you sleep in chambers last night?
Well, I wasn't allowed to stay at home. As predicted, Phyllida was shown that wretched newspaper.
By the milkman?
And the postman. And the greengrocer. She banished me from my own house.
Cancelled the wedding?
Not yet. If I sue the Beacon for libel, there's a chance she'll forgive me. But then we won't have any money with which to bring up our newborn child. And it's all thanks to you, Rumpel.
I really don't think you should continue to blame me.
I beg to differ. Of course,
I won't be able to spend another night here in Chambers. The cleaners will report me to Ballard.
Yes, it's a risky old business, as I learned for myself.
As I seem to remember, when you fell out with Hilda, you planted yourself with me. My kitchen still bears the scorch marks from your fry-ups.
Ah, no. I was indeed grateful for your hospitality.
And what's the journey like from Gloucester Road to here?
My front door is always open, Claude, and I'd be delighted to put you...
Oh, in. Thank you.
But I could never ask you to shoulder the burden of daily life with she who must be obeyed. It simply wouldn't be fair on you. I thought I'd done enough to dissuade my learned friend from seeking hospitality under the Rumpole roof, and so, with a glad heart, I went about my daily business. When my work was done, I decided to share some of the good fortune brought with my libel brief. I splashed out on 2 bottles of Pomeroy's Bubbly and some of the least exhausted flowers to be found outside Temple Tube Station.
Is that you, Rumpole?
No, Hilda. It's Judge Bullingham. I was hoping for a game of tiddlywinks with your husband.
What on earth have you got there?
All the fruits of the earth. Or, let's say, the fruits of the first cheque in Nettleship v. The Beacon. Paid in advance. The first of many, if we can spin out the proceedings.
You're doing that awful case.
That awful case will bring us 10 guineas a day in refreshers.
Helping that squalid newspaper insult Amelia Nettleship.
A barrister's duty, Hilda, is to take on all comers, however squalid.
Nonsense.
What?
Nonsense. You're only using that as an excuse. In actual fact, you're jealous of Amelia Nettleship.
My life has been full of longings, but I've never had the slightest desire to become a female novelist, if that's what you can call the illiterate lady.
My mind is made up, Rumpole. I won't take a drop of that champagne, and those flowers can go straight in the dustbin, which is where it appears you found them.
Now, Hilda, you listen to me. Oh, God. That's not... Please tell me that's not...
Claude telephoned and told me all his troubles with Philomena Trump.
Philida Trant.
And, of course, I invited him to stay.
Good evening, Rumpole.
You're wearing my dressing gown.
Yeah, I had to pack in a hurry. Ooh, champagne. To welcome me into your lovely home.
No.
Was the bath all right, Claude?
Absolutely lovely. Though I fear I've used up all the hot water.
The geezer can be quite temperamental. But Rumpole can do without his bath tonight. Let's go through.
Yeah. Now, which is your chair in here, Rumpole?
I sit next to the gas fire.
Not this evening. We mustn't let you get cold after your bath, Claude. So you go over there, and Rumpole will open the champagne, won't you, Rumpole?
As you command, Hilda. It was the Wagner belting out of the wireless over breakfast that drove me from my own kitchen the next morning. I sought sanctuary in the Royal Courts of Justice, where, when wigged and robed, I met Maurice Machin and Robin Pepiat QC.
Miss Nettleship is digging her heels in, refusing all offers of a settlement.
Good.
It is not good, Mr. Machin. I was hoping to wrap this up before luncheon at the Sheridan. It's steak and kidney pud on Thursdays.
My client's reputation is a little more important than steak and kidney pud. You're asking him to sign a statement admitting he printed lies.
If he joins in the apology, the Beacon will pay the costs and damages.
Who steals my purse steals trash, but he that filches from me my good name...
Oh, for heaven's sake, they gave up quoting that in libel actions 50 years ago.
Mr. Rumpole's right, though. My good name is the immediate jewel of my soul.
Steady on, old darling. Let's not go too far.
Unless we settle now, this case could last a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks? How very... expensive. I tried to keep the smile from my lips as I entered the court. At 10 guineas a day, I was overjoyed at Miss Nettleship's refusal to settle for anything less than a drawn-out fight in front of a jury.
and Mr. Justice Teasdale.
Rattling good yarns.
Who it seemed was a fan of the plaintiff.
Take it from me, members of the jury, her novels are what you might call page-turners.
My lord...
Yes, Mr. Rumbold?
Rumpole, my lord.
I'm so sorry. I fear you're something of a stranger to these courts.
Would it not be better to allow the jury to come to their own conclusions about Miss Amelia Nettleship and the quality of her writing?
Well, yes, of course. And when they do come to their own conclusions, they'll find she can put together a rattling good yarn.
All I could do was subside and look balefully at the judge. I felt a pang of nostalgia for the Old Bailey. The morning wore on, and it wasn't until mid-afternoon that I got my first chance to confront the authoress.
I swear by Almighty God that the evidence I shall give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
If ever I saw a composed and confident witness, that witness was Amelia Nettleship. Her hair was perfectly done. Her black suit was perfectly discreet. Her white blouse shone, as did her spectacles. So spotless did she seem that she might well have preserved her virginity until that very day. When she finished her evidence in chief, the thankless task of attacking her fair name was left to me.
Are you a truthful woman?
I try to be.
And you call yourself an historical novelist?
I attempt to write books which uphold certain standards of morality.
Forget the morality for a moment. Let's concentrate on the history. May I read you a short passage from an alleged historical novel of yours entitled Lord Stingo's Fancy?
Ah, yes, yes. Isn't that the one that ends happily?
Happily all her books end, my lord, eventually. To quote from this particular yarn, Sophia had first set eyes on Lord Stingo when she was a dewy 18-year-old and he had clattered up to her father's castle exhausted from the Battle of Naseby.
Since I'd yet to hear a word from Fig Newton, I was forced to spend as much time as possible analysing Amelia's creative efforts.
Now at the ball to triumphantly celebrate the gorgeous enthroning coronation of the merry monarch King Charles II, they were to meet again. Sophia was now in her 20s, but in ways too numerous to completely describe, still an unspoilt girl at heart. You call that an historical novel?
Certainly.
Haven't you forgotten something?
I don't think so. What?
Oliver Cromwell.
I really don't know what you mean.
Clearly, if this Sophia, this girl...
Dewy girl, Mr. Rumbold.
If this dew-bespattered Sophia had been 18 at the time of the Battle of Naseby in the reign of Charles I, she would have been 33 in the year of Charles II's coronation, and Oliver Cromwell came in between them.
I am an artist, Mr. Rumbold.
It's Rumpole. And what kind of an artist are you exactly?
I think Miss Nettleship means she's an artist in words.
Oh, really? She must have noticed that the short passage I read to the jury contained two split infinitives and a tautology.
What?
It means using two words that mean the same thing, my lord, as in the enthroning coronation. It's spelt T... A-U.
I'm aware of its meaning, and I know how to spell.
Well, then your lordship has the advantage of the plaintiff, who spells Naseby with a Z.
Perhaps this sort of cross-examination is common in the criminal courts, but I cannot see how it can possibly be relevant in an action for libel.
These questions, my lord, go to the heart of this lady's credibility.
I was running out of steam.
I have to suggest, Miss Nettleship, that as an historical novelist, you... are a complete fake.
Still no sign of Fig Newton.
You have no respect for history and very little respect for the English language.
So I was forced to take avoiding action.
My lord, I have questions, many questions, about the article that appeared in the Daily Beacon and its veracity. However, I see Miss Nettleship is looking tired.
I'm absolutely fine.
And I think it unfair on her and on the jury to begin a new line of inquiry when everyone's feeling exhausted.
It's only 3:30, Mr. Rumbold.
Which your lordship might feel is a little late in the day to start asking questions concerning Miss Nettleship's attitude towards sex before marriage, previous boyfriends, and the allegations by Stella January of liaisons with married men. If your lordship feels Miss Nettleship should get a good night's sleep before the arduous task of answering a barrage of personal and intrusive inquiries, I would have no objection.
Very well. We'll continue tomorrow morning. 10:30?
All rise!
I breathed a sigh of relief, then hurried to Pomeroy's, not merely to avoid an early return to the mansion flat in which Erskine Brown would be playing his way through Die Meistersinger, but also to meet Fig Newton and find out what dirt, if any, he could dish on Amelia Nettleship.
I stayed outside her cottage all night, Mr. Rumpole. I seen a bloke going in just after midnight, and then he come out again this morning, round about 5:30.
Why didn't you tell me? I was on my feet with nothing to say.
I was trying to find Stella January. I thought that was more important.
And?
She doesn't exist.
What do you mean?
I've never come across anyone I can't locate. But unless Miss January's a lot smarter than me, which is unlikely, I'll bet my bungalow on there being no such person.
You're quite sure?
I talked to a few people at the Beacon, off the record sort of thing. And no one ever saw her there. She's never written nothing for any other paper.
Hmm. And the bloke who stayed the night with Amelia, do you have a name for him?
Afraid not.
Oh.
And before you ask, I never saw his face because it was dark.
Did he have a car?
Yep.
You got the number?
No.
Oh, Fig.
But I did get this, Mr. Rumble.
A copy of the Beacon? How does this help me?
It was dropped by the bloke when he was getting out of his car last night. See the front page?
Oh, yes. Yes. I think that's interesting, Fig. Very interesting. The next day's edition of the Daily Beacon was coming hot off the press when I arrived at their building in Fleet Street. I glanced at the headline, something about a popular music performer and his latest dalliance with illegal narcotics. Up on the third floor, a couple of crumpled old hacks were drinking whiskey at their desks, proud of their efforts to expose hypocrisy and corruption, exhausted by their attempts to find salacious gossip worth printing.
No. No, we couldn't grab a photo in the ambulance. If she's dead, we'll try to get a snap of the body in the mortuary. But I can't promise... I have to go now, sir. Something's come up.
I'm sorry, Maury. I didn't mean to interrupt.
It was a proprietor. He rings every night.
Checking up on your stories? Trying to guess if your circulation will continue to plummet? Perhaps a final warning before he fires you.
What do you want?
I've just been with a friend who's spoken to some of your colleagues. In strict confidence, they told him your job's on the line.
That's not true.
So sue me. My friend also told me something interesting about Miss Stella January.
Oh?
You are Stella January.
Your friend sounds like he's off his head.
Actually, he merely said she doesn't exist. I'm the one who thinks she's you.
And why would you think that?
Because you wrote the article about Amelia Nettleship, knowing it would get the paper into trouble, knowing that Amelia would take you to court.
I'd have to be a masochist to want something like that to happen.
Well, it won't be you paying costs and damages. It'll be the proprietor. And he's about to lose a fortune.
We've still got a chance of winning the case.
Oh, no, we haven't. We'll fight for days and days, but in the end, the jury will award a huge amount of money to your girlfriend.
To my what?
You were seen entering and leaving Amelia's cottage last night. You arrived at midnight, left this morning before dawn.
Says who?
Says the man who picked up your litter from the drive. The Daily Beacon. Yesterday's copy.
Anyone in Godalming could have bought this.
No. On the front page, just there, it says first edition. That usually hits your desk at, what time, 10 p.m, 10:30? I imagine you gave it the once-over, then hurried off for your midnight tryst in Surrey.
You're clutching at straws. You got no real proof it was me that wrote the piece.
I agree, there's an element of guesswork.
Huh?
I'm guessing, for instance, that no young female journalist, such as Stella January, would make a comparison between Mae West and Florence Nightingale. But you would, and you did. And with a little more digging, I'm quite sure my friend will find concrete evidence to back up these theories of mine.
I did go and see Amelia last night, but only to ask her to drop the case.
Well, to use a legal expression, pull the other one. It's got bells on it. I told you I'm a taxi waiting on the rank, but I'm not prepared to be the getaway driver for a crime like this.
Have you told anyone about your theories?
Not yet.
And you won't, will ya? Because you're my lawyer.
Not any longer, Mr. Machin. I'm now an ordinary citizen about to report an attempted crime. I don't think there's any limit on the sentence for conspiracy to pervert the course of justice.
What do you mean? Conspiracy?
You're about to be sacked by the Beacon. Maybe they're paying you off, but not with enough dosh for your liking. So your girlfriend and you get together to make £6,000 or £7,000.
I wish I knew how.
Perfectly simple. You turn yourself into Stella January, the unknown girl reporter, and libel Amelia, your girlfriend. She sues the paper and collects the money. Then you both sail into the sunset and share the proceeds. But there's one thing I can't forgive. You're probably wondering what that is. All right, I'll tell you. Your plan called for an Old Bailey hack, a stranger to the civilized world of libel who wouldn't settle. Someone who'd attack Le Nettleship and inflame the damages. So you used me, Mr. Machin. You used me. Since it's a libel action, I'll offer you terms of settlement.
What sort of terms?
The fair Amelia to drop her case, you pay the costs, and in the matter of my learned friend Claude Erskine Brown...
Huh? What's he got to do with this?
Print a full and grovelling apology on the front page of the Beacon, and get them to pay a substantial sum by way of damages. Why did you print that photograph in the first place?
It was supposed to be a picture of you. I heard you say you were going to that club, and I wanted a bargaining tool. Just in case everything fell apart.
But when you didn't get a picture of me?
Our readers enjoy seeing people like Erskine Brown in places they shouldn't be. The pompous git deserved it.
And now you deserve everything you're going to get, which from the Daily Beacon is nothing at all. Good night, Stella. I'll see myself out.
The front page apology was enough to convince the Portia of our chambers to forgive her fiancé and turn up for their wedding just a few days later. She, who must be obeyed, refused to attend, citing her opposition to premarital sex as the reason. As best man, I was duty-bound to show my face.
You have the ring, Rumpo?
Unless it's jumped out of my pocket in the 2 minutes since you last asked me, yes.
And you've organised some taxis to take us to the reception?
I thought we'd all go by bus.
What?
The number 11 goes door to door and they run pretty frequently.
Rumpel, I don't want to go... Oh, you're having a joke at my expense.
It's so hard not to, Erskine Brown. Look, here comes the bride. Bad luck to see her before the ceremony.
Well, we spent last night together. We had breakfast.
Just do as you're told and go inside.
Oh, very well. But don't delay. The next wedding's in 20 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Rumpole.
Good afternoon, Miss Trant. You look...
enormous.
I was going to say... Actually, enormous will do.
It's kind of you to help Claude. And I know you arranged for that apology in the paper. Though I'm not quite sure how you managed it.
Best you don't know the details.
Mrs. Rumpole isn't here.
I'm afraid she doesn't approve.
Of me.
Of just about everything.
Well, it was good of her to put up with Claude whilst we had our little misunderstanding.
Good of me, too.
How did your libel end?
With a sudden outburst of peace and goodwill, much to the fury of Mr. Justice Teasdale.
You settled out of court?
Hmm. Amelia Nettleship dropped all the allegations, and the Beacon paid the costs with extremely bad grace. I've asked Henry to find me a nice bit of burglary or a GBH... anything which shows human nature in a better light than civil law.
I don't think you'll ever change, Mr. Rumpole.
I fear you're about to. Mrs. Erskine Brown to be. And so, after a short ceremony in front of half a dozen friends, but strangely no members of either the Erskine Brown or the Trant families, we travelled by taxi to the Goring Hotel in Victoria. And the moment I'd been dreading was soon upon us.
Ladies and gentlemen. thank you. It's customary, as you know, for the best man to make a speech, and being accustomed to rising to my feet and droning on for hours on subjects about which I know very little, I
found myself lost for words.
Well, I should say something. Something about Erskine Brown and his beautiful bride.
I racked my brains for some words of wisdom. Byron, Wordsworth, could Shakespeare help me?
Was it not a Roman acquaintance of Coriolanus who said, the fittest time to corrupt a man's wife is when she's fallen out with her husband?
Why did I think of that particular quotation? I quickly moved on to a sonnet.
Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove.
Mr. Rumpole.
I realized the Portia of our chambers was looking up at me.
In Belmont is a lady richly left, and she is fair, and fairer than that word, of wondrous virtues.
I tried not to gaze back at Portia.
Oh, no. It is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks.
I couldn't continue. So I turned in desperation to Lord Byron.
Lord Byron said, friendship may and often does grow into love, but love never subsides into friendship.
With a final glance at the beautiful ex-Miss Trant and a final effort to put romantic thoughts from my mind once and for all, I brought my sorry speech to an abrupt conclusion.
More to the point, Byron also said, man being reasonable must get drunk. The best of life is but intoxication. So, please raise your glasses and toast the bride and groom. Claude and Portia. Philida. Claude and Philida. Erskine Brown.
Claude and Philida.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you.
We look before and after and pine for what is not. Our sincerest laughter with some pain is fraught. Our sweetest songs are those that tell of saddest thought. Yet if we could scorn hate and pride and fear, if we were things born not to shed a tear, I know not how thy joy we ever should come near. Better than all measures of delightful sound, better than all treasures that in books are found, thy skill to poet were, thou scorner of the ground.
In Rumpole and the Bubble Reputation by John Mortimer, Horace Rumpole was Benedict Cumberbatch, Hilda Rumpole, Jasmine Hyde, Phillida Erskine Brown, Cathy Sarah, Claude Erskine Brown, Nigel Anthony, Maurice Machin, Ewan Bailey, and Porky Pepiat, Stephen Critchlow. Other parts were played by members of the company. Rumpole and the Bubble Reputation was adapted by Richard Stoneman, directed by Marilyn Imrie, and is a Catherine Bailey production for BBC Radio 4.